Blog Talk Radio.
Python Radio, brought to you by Morelia Python Forums, www.moreliapython.com. What's going on, Owen? How you doing?
You are way too excited. You tone it down. You slow that shit down now.
Hello.
Better. Much better. Yeah. What's going on is, you know, it's another Tuesday night, and we're on the radio again, and this time we get to speak to one of our close personal friends of the show, an all-around cool guy from across the ocean, Casper, so why not? It's a good day.
Yep, so. Yeah. Casper from Singular Reptiles, we're going to be talking to him in a couple minutes.
I'm rocking my Singular Reptile t-shirt.
Yeah.
If you don't have one, you clearly suck.
I am the sucky host of Morelia Python Radio.
Now I feel bad.
I don't qualify. I don't think he had hobbit size, so that's probably why I couldn't.
So. That must have been why. Damn it.
Figured it out. Nothing's going on. Just so everybody knows, tomorrow we'll end the entries for the calendar contest. After tomorrow night, we close the contest, and we will begin the sifting through all the cool pictures that we've seen. There's a lot of cool pictures, a lot of cool stuff.
There was a ton and a lot of late submissions that kind of just spiked all the competition up a little bit. Like,
yeah.
I thought it was pretty nailed down, and then all of a sudden everybody just went crazy. So, yeah.
I was kind of glad. So if you have a last-minute picture that you want to put in, make sure you go over to MoreliaPythons.com. And or you can put it up on the Facebook group page of Morelia Python Radio and, you know, submit it. So you have until tomorrow, and then that's it. We close it, and then we vote. And next week we'll let you know who the winners are. And, yeah, it should be cool. We got, don't forget, there's a 2,000 male Darwin that EB Morelia is donating and a 2013 female Carmel from Rogue Reptiles. And of course, if you win in any of the other categories, you will get the calendar for free. So, should be good stuff.
And the calendar is something great you can have in your snake room. I use mine to write down all the dates of shows that are coming up, as well as keep track of the other snakely business. And it's fun just to look at, like today, or last week, I turned it over to November and I got to see the silver peppered inland that was on,
yes,
that won the inland thing last year, and I'm just like, ooh, I forgot you were in here. That's,
yeah,
awesome. So, yeah, it's definitely very cool. And can you imagine if that's your snake that, you know, everybody can ooh and ah over, so.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. And, you know, it's I think next, the 2014 one will be especially cool because we up the picture quality, you know, like it's going to be calendar material. So should be good stuff. So if you have, if you want to get in there, you make sure that you get your camera and get some pictures shot tomorrow or otherwise you miss out. So
yep.
There you go. And we will have calendars for sale. You know, and we'll let you know how much it costs and all that stuff once we figure that out. But a couple cool things before we get to Casper on here. I know he's calling. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. I got my coffee going. He's got his coffee going. So we want to make sure we get to spend as much time.
He needs his a little bit more than you do. Just saying. It's only 9 o'clock here.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's late for me.
But I'm tired. Yeah, I can shut up.
So, you know, with MorelliPythonRadios.com, I've been doing a lot of research with, just trying to get locality pictures of different carpets and stuff. And it's really cool. And a lot of there's a lot of people from Australia that have been helping me out, which has made me start researching carpet pythons a little more in depth, and I'm discovering some pretty cool stuff. Like, for instance, even though it's in the book, when I went back and read the book again, Southwestern carpets, the Garden Island phase.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see a picture of one of them and what they look like?
No.
I'll have to send you that picture, you'll have to check it out. But there's a lot of cool stuff. And also, I don't know if you saw over on Morelli Python Radio, the Facebook page, but Wayne Larks, you remember Wayne Larks? It was
like
the first
man that is torturing my soul at the moment? Yes. Yes, I remember Wayne.
Yeah,
Wayne,
Morelli.
Thank you so much for posting up pictures of ghost jags and other things that just make me cry.
Yeah.
Jerk.
He's from Morelia Magic, and he hatched out some super hyper caramel jags. I don't know if you saw the picture of the one over there, but the red in the head pattern is just insane.
It's gorgeous. It's
just
insane.
Yeah. The other cool thing that I saw was, I don't know his last name, Nathan, but he goes by Chimera Pro Nathan. You ever see him pop up? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he runs Chimera Productions, herpetoculturist, and freelance wildlife wrangler. But pretty much his job is he gets to go out and relocate carpet pythons and, other reptiles and stuff down there in Australia. And I just wanted to give him a shout-out because I've been really digging his videos. I don't know if you saw he had a there was a coastal carpet in a PVC pipe. And he was taking it out of the PVC pipe. Did you see what that thing looked like?
No,
you didn't see it.
No,
on the page. Oh man!
God, I'm a failure. But
yeah,
apparently, this man is living your dream job. He just wanders around, finding carpet pythons and moving them to other places.
Yeah, heck yeah! I'll have to put up the. It was like all peppery and silver. Ah, it was really cool. Really, really cool.
Grab it and put it in a box.
The Facebook page over there, and I don't know. It's really wild looking. It's just cool, but yeah, he's got some cool videos. So yeah, you can go check out his Facebook page and watch some of those videos. And I was just asking him questions about just what it's like to have wild carpets in your backyard. Can you imagine? There was one video where he goes out into somebody's garage, and there's like three coastal carpets up in the roof just breeding or, you know.
Well, I was listening to the radio around here just on my way to work, and they're talking about freaky stories, and they're like, they're saying a woman in Australia woke up to 14 snakes roaming around her house. I'm like, uh-oh. And they go, the native carpet python. I'm like, oh, shit. They're like, they just apparently were inside her house, like, running around and, breeding, because everyone's freaking out. I'd be like, yes. I'd be like, yes, free carpet pythons. They came in. They're mine now. So it's
Yeah.
That's definitely very cool. Oh, that is a gorgeous animal.
You saw it now, right?
Yes. Yes, that
isn't
is pretty.
Wild looking? Yeah.
Yeah. So the variation in carpet python never ceases to amaze. It's you almost get that when you hatch out babies. It's like, this one is related to that one. And people are like, bullshit. You're like, no, same parents.
Yeah.
Eggs were right next to each other. It's one of those things. So.
Yeah. I felt like you today, Owen. I remember way back when I was first starting out in this gig, you know, you were kind of like, you know, picking up the carpets and working with them, and ones that were like aggressive, you were able to, you know, like keep cool and whatnot. So today I picked up a tiger carpet female from Zach. She probably could breed this year. She's from Ted Thompson.
Ooh.
And my
boy, that's Remus.
Yeah. She's very pretty, very, very pretty. She Zach's telling me that she's just pure evil, right? So I take her out, and I'm kind of holding her, and you know, I sort of got this little bit of confidence, and I'm like, oh, she's not too bad. And then like I go and pick her up, I put her on the table, and she just like squeezes my hand. You know, it's just like, oh shit, Zach, like, here she comes, she's going around, and you know, I was able to hook her so I could handle her. But you know, I don't know if she's not that bad. I was going to ask you. I know you have that same line. Is he aggressive or? No.
Remus, unfortunately, I lost Remus the last year, some mysterious ailment. But Trinity is actually from that exact same line. And Trinity has been, I got her 2 days after she hatched. I never should have bought that thing because I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And by all accounts, that animal should have died. But she's been one of my best carpet pythons. She's produced for me every single year. She's been amazing, and she only ever gets pissy when there are eggs in her cage. I absolutely love that animal. Remus never had any issues with him either, but I did have another one from the same line, and his name was Draco, and I had him in college, and he was very well known in college because people would come to my dorm to watch this snake, and the fact that he had nothing but hatred for me. He would follow me around the room with his eyes. He would position himself to strike me. He was just a pissed-off carpet python. But I ended up selling him because I couldn't take it anymore It was just massive amounts of stress and anger for everybody every time that cage door was open. So,
yeah.
But you know, the line, I like the line, I love the animals, and aside from that one bad apple, I've had good experience with them. So, yeah, it's a good pickup, and I think it would go well with some of that citrus tiger blood you got kicking around that you're not
sharing. Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. I was going to send Echo your way, but now I'm like, I don't know.
Oh, you bastard.
He might be breeding this year, so.
Just send me both, and we can just sit in the cage with Pixie, my high con tiger, and we'll see how whatever works.
So
I was wondering what was going on with that.
Yeah, I have like 15 males, so it's not like.
But you
have
25. So, you know, how many were in the clutch? 80? Yeah, I have them all. How many have you produced? None. You. Yeah, it's like, oh.
Yeah, so yeah, that's my breeding season is upon us. I don't know about you, but today it was, what, the low is 32 degrees or something like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, my breeding season is starting.
Swing.
You know, it's funny. I had today as the day I fed my snakes 2 weeks ago. Fed the females, fed the males, and usually I wait about 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks for them to clean out, and you know, and then start dropping the temps. But they all emptied out. They shed, and then they emptied out. My fear is that I was looking at the females, and as I'm holding them, they don't have that, like, that, I don't know, they feel like they emptied out, you know? It's like,
right.
I don't know if that matters or not, or what your experience is with that.
I definitely think it matters, and I think it's safe to. You have to empty them out, otherwise something bad could happen if the temps get too low or something crazy. So yeah, it definitely.
Well,
and I don't think they won't do anything.
I guess my thought was is though I would think that they would hold on to some of that for egg development and such. You know, like
that's why they have their fat stores. That's why they get. You've seen a female after it lays eggs. I mean, from my point now of what my girls look like until they have their eggs, kind of going to be funny because I don't really see that big of a dip in their body weight. Like, you know, right now they're not eating. They've emptied out. And they still look pretty good. But,
right. You
know, and they'll still look pretty good even through being gravid and their pregnancies and things like that and having their eggs. The second they have their eggs is when you finally realize just how bad they truly are. Is, you know, the worst carpet python you've ever seen in your collection is a female after it's had eggs. You're like, Jesus Christ, I've killed it. So
now, after she's internally incubated.
Shut up. So.
Yeah, they look damn near dead after they princess maternally incubate.
Exactly.
Man,
either
bad.
Way, they always look terrible. And then they get to eat a few times, and then they perk right back up. But that initial first response, you're like, holy shit, that's right. You have not eaten in 4 months. So it's one of those things. You kind of got to give them some time to bring it back up. But I think it's definitely crucial to, you know, you don't want anything still sitting in their stomachs or intestines while they go down for cooling. I'm on the same boat as you. I've started cooling, and actually my corn snakes are in full winter because just because of the way the weather's been going, because I pulled the corn snakes out of the room and put them in a bin underneath my bed, and then the temperature went temperature just freaking dropped. I'm like, well, you guys are in winter right now. Enjoy. So there's, I don't see them. They burrowed into the mulch, and they're gone. They're completely gone. But, yeah, it's actually I did a show this weekend. I took my Brettles with me. Not to sell the Brettles, but I'm just like, guess what? Who's cooling down real far? You guys. So, you know, I didn't warm up the car as much, and I started loading, and I brought the Brettles out with me and put them in the car and all this other stuff to kind of get them cooler. So, yeah, we'll see.
That's cool. My last observation before we bring Casper on is that, you know, usually one of the key signs that it's that you're getting towards breeding season is you see males cruising around the cage. So I have my males, and they're all kind of in the same rack. So what I noticed, oddly enough, and we've said this before that IJs go first, is that the male IJs are cruising. My granite, all my other IJs that I'm breeding this year, but all the other subspecies are not. So, I don't know. I thought that was kind of weird.
And I will find that my males were cruising until, like, I put some pairs together. I already did that just because I didn't want to miss anything, and I know I'm going to be doing some crazy stuff in the next couple weeks when it comes to my job and having to travel places, so I put boys in with girls already. I noticed that my boys were cruising until I put them in with a girl. Like, right now, my male IJ is content. He's sitting in his cage because he's there with his girl. My caramel jag was going absolutely bonkers in his bin until I put him in with my caramel female, and now he's curled up and relaxing and doing whatever. The same thing goes with my male Macaws python. He was... there was no pleasing him until he was in with the girl. Of course, the female Macaw that I have is a psycho, so I don't know why he's happy to be in there. But whatever.
Hey, whatever floats your boat. That's pretty much what I have going on and what's going on over here. Let's get Casper on here, and I know the first thing that we're going to hit on, we got a couple topics. We're going to hit on some Papuan pythons, which are one of the pretty much unknown. You don't really hear many people working with them. Breeding season. Obviously, we're going to hear about the Scream Jags and ICAS. He's just got some Bolens pythons and his group is growing pretty big and pretty fast. So it's going to be cool to see what he has to say about them. And then some of the roundtable stuff that we've talked about before in the past, and hear his thoughts on it. And there we go. So we're gonna, and then we got 55 questions about Thor's hammer and everything else.
Yes.
That
all the other things that other people do. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be asking them. So without any further ado, Casper, how you doing? Welcome to welcome back to Morelia Python Radio.
Welcome back to Morelia Python Radio.
Yeah.
Can you hear me,
How's
guys?
Going? Yes. Yes. Yes.
Great. It's good. I'm a bit tired, but drinking some coffee and trying to stay awake for you guys.
You can't really use that as an excuse because, like, we know that you stayed up to like 4 a.m. at ICAST, so, you know, we know you can do it.
Yeah. Of course.
So,
everything for you guys.
I mean, jump right into it, man. What are your hopes and dreams and worries for the upcoming season? What do you got cooking going on over there?
So far this year, I will only have carpet pythons. I think I'll wait a year on my Fuscus female. I'm just going to put them into the cooling period at the moment, and that's it. Actually, I just the period up to the cooling period when they just, you know, have to empty out and stuff like that, I always put the young males inside with the females.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, so they can, you know, learn to be around each other and maybe, you know. So I find it's good. It's pretty good. So, you know, if you put a young male into a older female's cage in the beginning of the breeding season, he might get scared or just, you know, crawl into a corner and sit there for weeks until he finally do something. But I find it nice to, you know, introduce them a bit before the season is going. So
I agree with that. And it's also good to find out if your female is actually a boy in disguise because if they start combating
exactly, like
mine did, you know there's an issue. So that's
yeah,
cool.
Well, I haven't had that accident yet. Actually, all the females are like squirming around the cage, spreading the shit around, making some, you know, tail movements. So they're pretty excited.
Cool. I did see your caramel jags that you posted up. There's some pretty girls. I mean, I wish I had one of them. So yeah, it's.
I will.
I damn well. Then we'll get that going over here. So what's
up with
the
nice.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Well, we had the glowing endorsement that you gave about the super caramels over here at ICAST, which was, you know,
I was actually thinking about doing that tonight as well.
Yeah, we need that.
So anybody out there, get us fun caramel, super caramel, sir.
Yes.
I saw those at ICAST. Those were pretty impressive. You know, there were some nice supers in there. For sure.
Compared to what they are now, with the sheds that they've done, they're 10 times better than what I brought to ICAST. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You guys all know. I mean, baby carpets when they hatch, you're like, I swear to God, it's going to be pretty. And then you got to wait, you know, a couple months till you actually have stock in. You can prove it.
They're like the ugly duckling in the snake world, so.
Exactly. So it's one of those things. But how are the Bolin's pythons doing?
They're doing great. You know, nothing special about those right now. Just they're always placed on the ground. You know, the cages are directly on the ground, so they always seem to get the colder temperatures every night. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, they're just going, you know, through the cooling phase, even though they're just small. So
how big are you guys?
My oldest are from 2011. So
okay,
and they're not big at all. They're like 500 grams.
Yeah. I think you just caused Eric physical pain when you're like, oh, they're nothing special, those Bolin's pythons that I have. I mean, I'm pretty sure his heart just stopped there.
Skip the beat. Skip the beat.
I mean, they're the best, but, you know, they're just...
Better.
They're just there.
they're over there.
I'm just never worried about those because they're like bulletproof. So.
Rattles, like you don't really even need to be concerned. It's fine. It's over there.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Exactly.
When you have them on the ground, there are they? Are you heating them up during the day? Like, how do you keep those guys?
I heat them up with a light bulb, just 10 hours a day with that, and of course UVB lighting. So that's pretty much it. Actually, they're like. I tend to go with that 86 Fahrenheit hotspot.
Okay.
And then just floor temperatures, and that goes year-round at the moment. So,
cool.
They can go, in the middle of December and start January, they go, like, in, you know, the 70s, low 70s at night, so... It gets pretty cold, you know.
Right. I think as long as they're able to get to a basking spot during the day, they probably can pretty much handle whatever. How about feeding those guys? How do you go about – you feeding them what, once a month, every other week, once a week?
I really don't plan how I feed them. I just feed them sometimes. I feel like.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I feed – my carpet pythons a bit more often.
Okay.
Not because I'm a heavy feeder at all, but, you know, I'm very, I feed very sparingly with those guys. Very.
Mm-hmm.
So they are like, they're like smaller than a yearling carpet at the moment, and they're like 2 years old, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
But they're pretty bulky and have a, you know, huge head, and they're just working.
Have you thought about, like, what your process is going to be for breeding them? Have you thought about that, what you're going to try to do?
Actually, not really yet.
No.
I'm just trying to build up the group, and, I'm going to take the time to just get them mature before I start doing anything. So I don't care if it takes about 7 years for them to, you know, grow to the perfect size. So,
yeah, I think that they just mature older. I think it's a fact of just them getting used to captivity, and once they come, they're good to go. So I should be breeding my Halmahera scrubs. I'll be breeding my Halmahera scrubs right around the same time that you're breeding the Bolin, so we'll just do a switch.
I think the scrub complex need a few more years than carpet pythons.
I agree.
And,
same thing with the Leo python.
That's just why nobody breeds them, because they try to breed them quite young and then they just give up. Then they get to new conditions and have to, re-acclimate there, and it takes a few years and around and around, and they never get to breed, so.
Right, so you got to hold on to the project a little longer.
Yeah, if you're getting into scrubs, man, that's one of those things you got to, like, really think about it, and if you're going to be successful with them, you got to commit, man, and that's, like, a long time. That's just,
It's not a year project, none of them.
Yes.
It's at least 10 years.
Yeah. Easy. But
easy.
I think once you see more of them in captivity, man, they're cool snakes, but,
they're,
I don't know.
I really love them.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff. So, back to your breeding season. Like, what's, mm-hmm. what, What's your most I know you have some high end carpet stuff going on, and what's your most anticipated pairing, the one you hope to goes the best, the most?
Okay, so my most anticipated pairing right now or this season will be 100% the Caramel Jack Head Authentic to a IJ Line Head Authentic Go. So I really, really, really want to see some of those, you know, ghost jacks or whatever you call them.
Oh, sweet.
Wait, it's a Jack Head Exantic crossed with
It's a Caramel Jack Head Authentic male to a IJ Line Head Authentic female.
You monster.
Yeah, so
that
it's going to be really interesting.
It's just a
Caramel Jack Head Authentic to a Head Authentic girl that's from the IJ Line.
That's going to be cool looking.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder how the...
I've seen a lot of, you know, pure coastal Authentics that have been pretty weak. So I'm stoked to, you know, what do you call it, outbred it to the IJ Line. If it's 100% IJ or whatever it is, but at least it has been outcrossed a bit, so.
Yeah.
Cool.
There's still the,
so
the big...
stronger Authentics.
Okay, so you're hoping for some snow jags.
That's
pretty
bad.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Wow, cool. What else you got cooking for the season?
Ooh, I have a Caramel Jack Head Albino to a Caramel Head Albino girl.
Okay.
Ooh, so that could hold some Super Caramel Albino, some Super Caramel Jack Albinos, and some, you know, everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's what's fun about those combos where you got a lot of genes going. So when you hatch your clutch, you can get a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, very variant. And are you expanding on the Scream Jags any this year, or is that going to wait for a little bit?
I'm trying to pair Scream up with two Caramel Girls see if I can boost the color. But that's about it.
Boost it?
So, yeah.
How the hell are you going to boost it? Where else is it going to go?
You know, if you keep boosting color, eventually it turns white, right?
It burns the retinas.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's cool. What do you? That's wow.
Contributed to black and white diamonds as well, just to get, you know, maybe even wider ground color.
Wow. How are they coming along, by the way? Are they what you expected, or did they surpass your expectations?
Actually, they're way better than I expected.
Really?
Yeah. Some of the babies are just stunning, and one of those I posted a lot, I named Shout. he's just nuts.
Is that because when
he's
you open
the world,
it up,
so.
You shout, oh, my God. Nice.
Yeah, I scream and shout.
Now, I love how we're so easily amused. We're just, oh, my God.
That's cool stuff. Yeah. What else? What, anything else? You know, probably one of the things that I'm pretty excited about for you is the Green Line IJs.
Yeah. I almost forgot those. That's my pretty, you know. I love those guys.
They're cool looking. So hopefully you can expand on that. I mean, what's the idea behind that project, to get him, just see what comes out?
You know, my female, she's authentic. I'm pretty sure of that, but she's unproven still. So in the first place, I wanted to, you know, try and prove her out. And they're siblings, so if the male is, he could actually be maybe possible head authentic or anything like that. So if it proves out to be authentic gene, then it's nice. If it's not, I'm gonna hold back some males from the clutch and try bringing them back to the mother.
Mm-hmm.
A few years, and yeah.
Just see how
that's
it goes.
Pretty much where I'm going, but it's pretty funny because the male, he's quite amazing himself. He's like he got that. He's 5 years now, and he still got those lavender colors coming through, and yeah, it's just nuts. So it could be funny to, you know, make an IJ line that's actually still lavender when adult. So
that would be cool.
Yeah.
That's my my primary goal for the non-Asantic version of the green line, I think. But
the granite line that is the Viking Reptilia line or Pool Boy, whatever you want to say. I have one of those het female, and the lavender is really intense on that girl.
Yeah.
I don't know if that comes from the granite or the, I don't know what he bred them to get that.
I've actually seen a lot of het granites get that lavender color.
Really?
I don't know whether it's from the granite trait or what it is, but yeah.
Cool.
I really like that look they got. It's some of the best stuff about those IJs. That's the lavender yielding color they got.
Oh yeah, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
No.
Absolutely.
Go home, jungles.
Drop the hammer. There you go. What about, I know you were saying earlier that, you know, with the 2014 breeding season, you were saying something about cleaning and making sure that your cages are spotless and clean. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Last season, my green line IJ, she got sick, and a lot of other stuff got sick. Actually, most of them was IJs. Last season, I didn't clean as much because I didn't want to stress them while breeding or while, you know, in with the females and stuff like that. So I when they shit, I just left it in there for a couple of weeks. So and the same way about the water, I rarely serve new fresh water for them. So, and I got all those RIs. So I figured if I, you know, it's pretty stressful with the snakes, just in the first place to cool them like the way we cool them, because, you know, in nature they're not cool like that, you know, changing temperatures from one night to another. And being with a female that they haven't seen in, you know, since last breeding season, or never seen a female before, it can be pretty stressful. So being in that situation, plus the minor, what do you call it, changing newspaper, water, etc. I think it combined can stress them enough to, you know, be more vulnerable to RI, other sickness. So I really wanted to, you know, keep my cages clean this season and hope for the best. So I think it's pretty vital for keeping a healthy collection during the breeding process to clean during the, you know, cooling period. So
Definitely agree with that one.
Yeah. What about well, we did have a question about,
another thing, that when you put your males into the females' cages, you know, then the males are in, you know, they get in, if to explain, but, you know, the female have a water bowel, and if she has something going on in the male drinks of that water bowel, he can't get sick. So what I do is that I actually put a fresh new water bowel in when they are paired together. So
okay.
I don't get into that stuff. So.
Okay, so clean slate with the water bowl once you introduce.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so we had a question come in from Graham Andrew Badenson, and he wanted to know how you cycle your animals for breeding. Like, what's your process?
It's pretty simple, actually. Here in Denmark, the cooler month around November and December, it's getting cold pretty quick. So my basement is cooling down, naturally. And so when I see that the temperatures is falling, I just, let it flow, and, automatically the cage temperatures are falling as well. So then they get acclimated to those temps. It's not like I'm going cold overnight. So it's pretty easy for them to getting used to those temps. And remember, I do that. I turn the night drop down every second day, so it's like 2 degrees down every second day, and for 1 week. And after that, I actually just set a timer on my my heat source for 10 hours a day, and then it's 10 hours with a hotspot like they used to, and 14 hours of no heat at all. And I'm doing that for 3 months, and then they can get, it's pretty different. Some days are, super cold, and other days are just normal, but they get down there, and it seems to work, so that's what I do. And I like keeping all my snakes pretty cold, because I think it's pretty important to keep your snakes cold in the colder period, because then they get used to it and not as often get those annoying RIs that people are dealing with. So
Yeah, RIs suck.
I don't know about you guys.
I don't know if it makes sense, but I'm pretty tired, so.
You're okay. No.
How much time?
So, but I totally agree with the cooler temps. What is the coldest you let your snakes get to?
It's around I'm trying to,
You're trying to do the conversion, aren't you? From Celsius to Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying. it's down to like 75-ish.
Okay. So about mid-70s.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And that's, of course, for the the bowl and the Apodora, I go further down. They can handle it. So I've called it, of course, the diamond pythons.
Okay. So I know you've been big into the Papuan olives.
Yeah. They're amazing.
Yeah. Well, tell us some more about them. How do you like them? What's going on with them?
Well, they're a large python from West Papua, they're in New Guinea, and they live in the lowland woodlands and savanna areas, and according to Margot Shea, they should be pretty widespread in West Papua and the northern and western parts, and even offshore on the Biak and Misu Islands. They're pretty common. They often are seen as roadkills, and they do get pretty large. So I would say they are normally around 13 feet, but they can get up to 16 feet in length for a large female. Yeah, so they are large snakes. They're insanely muscular built. You know, I have a male that's from 2010, and he's like the size of my thumb in girth. Yep. And when I hold him, if he squeezes my fingers, they will turn purple.
Oh my God!
they're just stronger than you can ever imagine. They're just really, really, really strong. And,
How would they compare to the? I know a lot of times they're confused with the Australian olive python. How would they compare to them?
I would say they are more muscular built, and of course they can get longer. But they're just nothing. They're so different than the olive Australian ones. It's funny because when I post pictures of them, people send me messages and ask, "What the hell is that kind of python? I've never seen that kind of before." And they're just so unknown. And it's just funny that people always choose the Australian olives compared to the Papuan pythons, and formerly called, Papuan olive pythons. I really like that short, stumpy head they got. It's just amazing, and their large head scales and the ability to change color from almost jet black, gray to brown, and I even see them in totally light olive coloration sometimes. They're just awesome snakes.
That's very cool. So, what's the temperament like?
They're pretty cage aggressive, and they got that bluff strike. They always do that, like strike a couple of inches very quick and then open their mouth and hiss a lot. They're the vocal snakes. They talk a lot. So
they
always they try to look dangerous, but they're just very calm snakes. Actually, I just took them out, and I never handle my snakes, but I can take the largest the larger ones out just with a hook, and then they're just calm as a puppy dog.
I have Australian olives, and they have an insane food response. Those suckers are always freaking hungry. The other Papuans kind of same kind of way.
Yeah, but they're hungry, just not as hungry as the Australian olives. I used to have Australian olives as well, and I could take them out of the cage, but they were just so hungry that they were looking for food all the time. So when I held them, they would just like sniff, smell them, kind of just try to bite me, see if I was food or
if I was food. Yeah. So I have the same freaking problem.
The Papuan pythons don't do that. Notice. I think they're somewhat pretty smart, and they are much smarter than the Australian olives. But they seem to notice that you're not food at all once you're out of the cage.
Ozzy olives are just stupid. I got you.
The Papuan pythons, they eat scrub pythons, right? In the wild.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's, it's pretty rare in pythons, but they are snake eaters. And there have been several documentations from Mark O'Shea that found a dead Papuan python, and he opened up the stomach and found a larger scrub python in the stomach. So they are pretty,
You got to be a pretty goddamn strong snake to overpower scrub python.
Scrub python, Jesus.
That ain't no joke.
I think they're just optimistic eaters, you know. The diet in the wild is just whatever they can overpower, you know, of mammals, birds, other snakes, whatever. So
right.
I think their diet is they eat everything.
Wow. Now, what about as far as are they perchers? Are they, you know, you see them hanging in their water bowl? Are they hiding all the time? What's some of their observations?
In my observations, they don't have those arboreal tendencies at all. They seem to get nervous and try to get away when you handle them because I don't think they like being away from the ground. So that's pretty much my observations, but they like to hide a lot, and in my cages I have two hides. I have a normal hide from medicine, and I they seem to I've had them without the humid hides, but they seem to have bad shits when I remove the humid hides, so I always have those.
Humid hides, what do you mean? You're just putting a hide with some cypress mulch in it or something like that? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not like it's dripping wet, that cypress mulch, but it's, I just once in a while when I remember, so, and that seems to help. And they seem to drink a lot of water, so I always provide them with a large water bottle. So
okay.
And with a lot of fresh water. So I think that's enough to do it. I don't I never spray my at all. So
now, are they a species that's been bred in captivity? Pretty, you know, like do people have success with them that try, or are they up there with scrubs where they're more difficult?
They're 100% a difficult species, a very difficult one. I know of some people that bred them, and I actually have a pair of captive breds in my collection, luckily. But it's not something that happens every year. It's pretty rare. And I had a friend of mine that have tried to breed them the past 3 years without luck. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
Are you concerned?
The female are having follicles and they're growing, but you know, at some point she just absorbs them again. So,
jeez.
It's pretty.
Damn,
it's like the scrub pythons.
Yeah.
Why Papua New Guinea? Why? But. Casper, are you concerned about?
I just think we have the wrong, you know,
yeah.
idea about breeding those snakes because, yeah, it's pretty much there's no you know, large night drop in New Guinea, so, and we always try to you know we always when we think pythons we think we have to you know. Make the temperatures drop a lot to get them into breeding mode, or we have to, you know, fix the lightning or anything like that. But the truth is that both the temperature and the lightning is pretty much year-round in New Guinea. So I think it could be fun to, you know, have a look at how the follicles are growing through the year. And see when they're most receptive of the male sperm. But
no. Casper, are you concerned about putting your pair together if the girl's going to be like, you look delicious, and decide that the male has to be eaten? I mean,
yeah,
when I bred California king snakes, that was always in the back of my head of like, she's going to eat him, and then I'm going to be in trouble. So
I think California king snakes are nothing compared to these.
Actually, well, yeah, but Jesus.
My pop ones, I always make sure to wash if I've touched other snakes before.
Really?
I always, yeah. They tend to smell it or stuff like that. Actually, there was, I think it was Mark O'Shea that wrote that he saw a papillon python eating its another papillon python's chef or something like that. So, yeah, whatever smells like snake is food to them, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a crazy day in the snake room if you're getting nailed by one of those.
Yeah.
Have you ever been bitten by one of them?
No, never.
No.
Oh, lucky.
They don't seem aggressive at all.
No.
When they're no.
Okay.
They're like puppy dog tin compared to Australian olives. I find those psychotic.
Yeah, mine are a little loopy, so okay.
They're just not trustworthy at all.
Yeah, I don't trust them.
This is a question that we never had before, but this was on the thread that we had over on the Facebook, and this one was from Carpet Cartel. What was the worst bite that you ever got, and what was it from?
Is it a reptile bite or a snake bite?
Let's go with reptile bite.
Yeah.
you know, it was a couple of weeks ago from my side. That was the worst ever.
Which one?
My prehensile tail skink, my Carusha. One of my females just bit a part of my finger off. So.
Bit a part of your finger off?
What?
Yeah, small part.
Jesus.
Fucking ate it.
Oh, crap.
Jesus, things are terrible.
These are the monkey tail skinks, right?
Yeah, I'm the monkey tail skinks.
This is the one that I hear. Everybody that's into skinks all the time that they talk about.
They all want it.
They all want this thing. This thing
off.
Bit your part of your finger off and ate it.
Yeah, it was a small pod. You know, the tip of my, you know, ring finger or whatever you call it.
Wow. So
wow.
That bled like shit.
What?
I could not stop the bleeding at all.
What caused it to do that? Was it a feeding response or defensive or what?
Is it just a jerk?
She's a jerk. But all mine are like that. All mine are like crazy aggressive.
Wow.
But they are in this small family group of three, one male and two females. And when I open the cage, you know, just for cleaning, they come running, you know, with open mouth and sounds like small bulldogs just growling at me.
Oh, my goodness.
So, skinks are dangerous.
Yeah, they are. And they have, like a jaw muscle that's not for fun, so they can put some pressure on those bites, so they're not something.
So, you don't see very many of them in captive collections, and they're still pretty pricey and rare. What are they like to work?
They used to be pretty. They used to be cheap. Like they were imported a lot in the early days. I heard like people bought them for $50. And but they're not. They don't breed easily, and they get like one or two babies, just like the shingleback. So they're not a prolific breeder at all. So, and plus that the Solomon Islands made a registration, so you cannot export or, you know, import any of those animals anymore. So it seems like what's in the U.S. or European collections right now, it's what's left. So,
right.
Of course, some of the animals are dying out, and not a lot of people are breeding them, and they only get one or two babies, if they get babies at all. So, of course, the prices, you know.
Sure, it's supply and demand, right?
Right.
I was lucky enough to acquire a larger male from one of the biggest breeders of Kalushi in Europe. So, and
are they more popular in Europe than they are in the U.S.?
No, actually, they're not that popular in Europe.
Okay.
You never see them. If I post a search for them on, you know, the European classifieds, that's pretty much the only, you know.
You're the only ad out there.
And I never get contact or anything. They're just like, they're non-existing. I know of a few people that got them, but that's it. So.
What made you get into them? Like, what made you want to work with them?
It's one of my earliest memories of reptiles is actually from a skink. I was in a reptile zoo and I saw them, and I remember asking if you could have those as pets. And then I think it was a woman that was handling them, and she just said, "No."
No. Oh well, sure.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, everything is possible, you know.
I know the Philadelphia Zoo. They have a pretty big group of them, right, Owen?
Yes, they have a whole back room full of them, and they have a bunch of different breeding pairs from the different islands. If you ever again go behind the scenes of the Philly Zoo, it's a pretty cool setup that they got back there. So
there are a lot of different, you know, localities, and there are two subspecies. There's the main subspecies called Carusha sabrata sabrata, and then there's the smaller subspecies called Carusha sabrata offridsmithi. And they're more colorful and smaller and, of course, a lot more rare. So you never see those anymore.
Right. So this is kind of a newbie question, but are they anywhere related to like the blue tongues or the shinglebacks, or are they just nowhere near related to them?
Actually, that's a good question, but in a matter of fact, how they look, they're not at all related, and they are, you know, just complete the opposite of what a blue tongue is, really. The head structure is different. Of course, they live in trees. They have a prehensile tail, which is, you know, pretty wicked that a skink does. But, you know, I can see what you mean, but by the, you know, to the shinglebacks, because they live in family groups.
Right.
They take care of their young, and they only have one or two babies per year.
Wow.
So,
That's pretty cool.
I think they're a super cool species. I'm nowhere near perfect. You know, I don't know a lot of them about them yet, but I just got them, you know, before this summer. I'm still a newbie, but I really enjoy keeping them. And they're my only lizard at the moment, and I haven't been keeping a lot of lizards, so they're not my specialty. they're super fun, and I can recommend them so bad. They're just badass. And I know Zach wanted them bad, and you should just go out and grab one.
A big fan of those, I know that. What do they eat? Are they bug eaters, or are they plant eaters, or are they both?
They only eat plants. I know I know that some people offer them a small amount of insects or tingy mouse just to the females to get their, you know, to raise their protein level after giving or something like that, but they only eat greens. So what I do, I feed them every other day with different kind of greens and fruits, and I just, you know, shake it in some calcium dust, and that's it.
Okay.
Mm.
Cool.
I mean, they're really, really easy. They're really easy, and they go year round. You know, I'm as I said before, I'm nowhere near expert on those at all, but I know for a fact that they don't need any, you know, cool temps requirements for breeding. They're just like year round the same temps, and when they're, you know, acclimated to cage and are in a group, they will breed by themselves. I know they start breeding around April, and females are pregnant for 7 to 10 months and then just have one or two babies per litter. So,
wait, you said they're pregnant for 7 to 10 months?
Them, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's a pretty long gestation, but
cool.
Yeah.
Man, that's like human. You know, like having a human.
A colony of human babies. Yeah, great.
It's
7 to 9 months. Good lord.
You know, some of those females that are pregnant are like 800 grams, and they give birth to a baby that's 200 grams. So that's like 25% of their body weight they
Jesus.
Give birth to. That's just nuts.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like having a 50-pound baby or something. You know, like 25 to 50-pound baby. Good lord.
Holy crap.
All right. Wow. So
I heard that they get extra nasty while they're pregnant, so I can't imagine that. That's just too much, but I heard so.
Oh, man.
Jesus.
So if you got a monkey tail, don't stick your fingers in there. They're not for
That's going to be the tip of the week this week. If you have a monkey tail, don't poke it in the face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I would have never picked that to be your worst bite.
Wow. So what on that topic, Dave Kelly had a question, and he wrote, what draws you to those more obscure species? How does he set out to prepare to breed said species, since you might not have a large understanding of how to breed them in captivity? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's we don't really have to, you know, think a lot about the cooling temperatures. I think that's not the main point of how to breed those pythons. I think we have to make them feel secure, as mentioned earlier on one of the other shows, and I think we have to acclimate them several years before even trying to breed. They need to be totally fine with the surroundings and the temperatures in your snake room. I think we need to have a lot more stable temperatures and with no changing in temperatures from a season to another. I think it's pretty important to have a stable, you know, couple of years for them in captivity before we try anything. And I haven't tried breeding any of those, what do you call it, hard pythons or, you know, but I think in my opinion, I need to keep them a lot of years and don't hurry and do not see them as I need to breed them more like it would be fun and it would be interesting, a nice long puzzle, you know, instead of a short breeding process.
Right.
So.
Right.
Right. More rewarding, too, in the end.
Yeah.
Sure, I think that, to me, I don't know about you guys, but that's what kind of draws me to working with some of those more obscure species, you know, like Halmahera
mm-hmm.
scrubs and whatnot, is, you know, the payoff is going to be the fact that you kind of figured it out. Sometimes I'm with you, Casper. I think it's not as hard as we make it out to be. I think we overthink things a lot. We try to make
yeah.
it more difficult than it is, and, you know, it's really not that. I mean, I guess it's easier said than done, but I don't know. It just
right.
seems like, you know, we try to put a round peg into a square hole type of thing, you know. But
right.
I know myself, I'm guilty of it, trying to overthink stuff a lot. I noticed that you said a couple times, you talked about UV and lighting and light cycles. Is that a big part of your process just overall? Do you feel that that's important? And do you notice a difference? Actually, I'd be curious to have your thoughts on, like, a brittle jag and all that kind. Like, do you notice a difference in your snake, especially, like, the scream stuff with the UV lighting?
I'm only using UV lighting in my Bowland cages.
Oh,
and,
that's it. Okay.
That's it, because it's way too expensive to have such a large collection and using UV bulbs. But, that would be very expensive to have to use those in every cages. But and it's funny because they go out, so, you know, they like, you can use them for 2 months and then they're just gone, and then you have to buy some new ones. And if you want the good ones, they're just like insanely expensive. In Europe, they're like freaking $100 for so.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's really funny because some of the monitor breeders that I know, the one thing a monitor lizard will do when it's bored is decide to break its UV bulbs. And it's like, no, you jackass, you don't need to tell us what it costs. So, yeah, it's one of those things that can happen.
It's really expensive to keep monitors.
Mm-hmm.
It's really expensive. The electric bill. That's why it's these snake size.
It doesn't help.
Yeah. yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. But I think I, you know, it's funny because when my hotspot is off, my Bowlands, they're still laying, you know, trying to get some of the last and getting through before all the lightning is going off. So they seem to like it a bit, and I tried having UVB lights in half of my setups and no UVB lights in the other half, and they tend to, you know, their coloration is much more vivid. So that's another nice, kind of very beautiful snake. Give it some UVB.
Right.
It can't hurt, you know. So.
Sure. I often hear that with brettles, you know, like that's why I was asking about the scream stuff is that some of my, well, I keep my brettles currently are in racks because they're not quite anywhere near adults yet, but they're kind of not like what a lot of other people's brettles look like. And I don't know if that is because they're growing. I know as they reach adulthood, they get more of that color come in, but still, I see some people post up pics of their brettles, and they're like super, super, super nice, you know. So that red really comes out. So I'm wondering if that's. What about you, Owen? Do you put any kind of UV in your brettles cages or anything?
No.
No.
It's funny because they live in a place where, you know, there's a lot of, what is it called?
I mean,
well,
I don't,
you know,
have any UV bulbs, but they are, right now they're near, like, they're upstairs in my bedroom where there's a window, so I have opened the window and kind of let the light in a little bit, but I don't have a UV bulb on them, and they seem to be acting fine. Of course, I say that, and I won't get any eggs this year, and then I'm going to get, like, every single UV bulb known to man for next season, so.
All right. You were, Casper, you were saying that they're from a where they're from?
Oh, yeah, I was just saying that their natural environment, they're exposed to, you know, the high temps and very high amounts of, you know, UVB. So even though they are nocturnal, they sometimes get out in the day. You know, maybe it's something,
sure.
Maybe it's not. You know, but yeah.
I never
exposed them for UVB lighting. I just kept them on heat mats, and that was fine. And mine were always red, you know. They were nice.
Did you ever freeze them? I can't breed IJs and brettles. Okay. So.
Yeah, I bred my brettles, and I bred them in 2009. So.
Okay.
Cool.
Did you breed them the same as your carpets, or did you have a different approach as far as them being springtime breeders and et cetera?
They were in the same room, and I didn't pair them up until April, I think.
Okay.
So actually, they were just on the floor, so they got that colder temperatures, just like my Bowens does now. And
okay.
They seemed fine, and they went through the cooling period without a problem. And I, you know, in February I started feeding them heavily, especially the female, and I paired them well. And two parents was swamped. So
right.
And but they were older animals. You know, they were. I bought them as proven, and they were from 2002, so they had this in them. So they were not young animals at all.
Cool. I think that brettles in particular are one of those carpet. Well, they're not carpets, but one of those species that are very, very underrated. People don't appreciate.
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
Appreciate
yeah.
their beauty.
I remember when they were, people were like, shit, I need this stuff. And when the price just, you know, fell down to nothing, people just didn't care anymore. And that's just a huge problem, I think. And it's so sad because we're losing species on that ground, if you want to call that. But,
Yeah,
if it's not money, if it's not worth anything, then it's not worth breeding in people's minds. You know, that if they can't make money on it, why keep it?
Right.
So
do you find that is the thinking over in Europe, in the UK? Do you find that a lot?
It's funny that we're talking right now because. I was trying to find a brettle breeder, and I couldn't.
Wow.
I think I don't know anyone that has bred brettles for 2 years.
Wow. Huh. I think you got a major commitment with them. You know, it's like they take a little longer to mature. You know, again, I haven't bred them, so I'm just talking off of what I've heard. they're not the same as carpets, but I mean, some to have consistent success, I've heard that they have to get a little cooler. I don't know whether that's true or not, but you know, I'm going by the people that have had success breeding them. But you know, I see some of the selective breeding that can be done with them. You know. I see like Nick's animals, and a lot of times like
yeah, if you want some really nice red animals, get the Swedish Morelia Inc. I think he was Henrik's line. Those animals
yes.
are neat. They are very
yeah.
nice, almost typo-ish, and they're just. I think if you really want to get into breeding brettles, you need that line. If you want to make even better brettles in the future.
Right. Would that be the one that Paul works with?
I actually don't know.
Eric's hoping that's where his came from. So.
No, no, I don't have that line yet. But actually, I have
I think Martin has some. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The is that the a fours line? That might be the
that's
fours
the same.
One. Yep.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That's the same.
Yeah, they are super red.
I used to keep the Dark Prize line, and they were very nice too. But I've seen some from that line that's pretty dull, and I've yet to seen a Air Force line that's not, you know, insanely nice. So
yeah, they're cool snakes.
But Kevin has really really good barrels too. His adults are just amazing. So.
Yeah, he has a nice. I don't know what line his is from, but I know that they get a lot of sunlight.
Yeah,
you know. So
I love how snakes in the nature. It really looks fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, we were talking a minute ago. You were saying about how people have these species and subspecies, and they kind of get lost in the hobby. You know, it seems like to me, I don't know, but when I first got into carpets, it seemed like Darwin's and Inland's, it was the thing that everybody wanted, I guess, because they couldn't have.
Yeah.
And now that they're available,
available.
You know, now people don't give a shit about them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's those two right there in particular, such a cool carpet python. I used to often kind of think that Darwin's were similar to IJs, but after working with them, they're completely different. You know, you look at pictures,
totally,
they kind of look
totally
identical, but completely different. I often, you know, it's years that I guess we'll be waiting, but I know eventually probably they'll end up here somehow. But Imbricata, you know, to me, it seems like it's going to fall into that same type of thing. People are going to be crazy because they, you know, it's a new thing, and then, you know.
Yeah, it's funny
it
because most of the imbricatas are pretty butt ugly.
mean, yeah.
They're just, like, super dull and no contrast at all and just, you know. But, you know, it's a new species that people don't have, so, of course, they're interesting.
Yeah.
Everything you don't have is nice, you know. The grass is always green on the other side.
That is true. I'm on a kick right now. I need some Inlands in my life, so hopefully
Inlands
that can be stopped. Yeah.
Do you work with Inlands, Casper?
Not anymore. Not after last season.
Okay.
I lost my big female to Eggo.
Oh, that hurts.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Why do you think that happened? Did you have any thoughts on what went wrong?
I'm afraid she didn't have enough body fat to get those eggs out and get through it. So I blame it on myself for feeding too sparingly.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way with my Carmel girl. I know a lot of people trying to convince me different, but, oh, and you know, you saw her. She was... I think that's the reason why she, luckily...
Has the issues.
Luckily, I have somebody like Owen that lives around the block that I can call. And
goddamn right.
Save the day. But, you know, that was a scary day for sure. But
The problem is you learn by doing, and you got to kind of have the bad moments. And hopefully your bad moments will help educate somebody else so that they can avoid them in the future. And, of course, you never make the same mistake twice.
Last year I lost two females to eggbound, so this year I'm going to feed a bit more heavy when they get out of the cooling season while trying to pair them up. But that's my approach. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they use a lot of energy to, you know, grow those follicles and get those eggs fertile. So they need some food, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
and to process those large eggs. That's, you know, they're always so freaking skinny when they come out. And
yeah, we were talking about that. They're so damn thin when it's done. It looks like you killed them. Yeah.
But I'm curious to first, what did you think of the ICAST, and how did it pair up to, say, shows in Europe, and, you know, what did you take away from it, and did you get to tour any local, when you were here, anybody's facilities or anything like that?
First off, a huge shout out to Howard. He's the man.
And Howard Redding, yeah.
As Julie referred to, he's a DUM, a damn useful man. So
that's a good one.
He's the boss. He's the boss. And of course, I saw Howard's animals, and he had some. You saw them too at ICAST, but he had some amazing jungles and some super nice red jacks. So I stayed there for a couple of days, and that was awesome. He's a great guy.
Oh yeah.
And man, he's good at drinking beer. That's for sure.
Yes.
At least we know.
How's Eric? How's the snaps? How's the schnapps going? Is it empty yet, or is it just collecting dust?
It's collecting dust. I forgot that thing's still in my car. I hope I don't get pulled over, man.
Eric's going to get pulled over and arrested for a DUI, ladies and gentlemen. Way to go. Great.
I'm just in my car taking Viking snaps. That's it.
Yeah, I'm not a big – I'm more of a beer drinker. Yeah, I know. That's our service announcement for tonight. But
yep.
I'm more of a beer drinker than an alcohol drinker.
I wonder if you can ride a horse while being drunk. Is that
yes, you can.
Did you ever – that was a question apparently on for the questions for tonight. Somebody wants to know if you ever did find that horse. Yeah.
It's still missing. Weird. It's still missing. That damn horse.
So, what did you think of the USA of the United States breeders while you were over here?
Oh,
or did you go back going like a bunch of freaking idiots? So,
I loved ICAST and I really love all you guys. So that was an amazing experience for them. I just love being talking nerdy stuff with other people, and it was a great feeling that you were like in a group. You could just. I just felt like I was home, so
right,
that was great. And yeah, you guys are so, you know, everybody's just so friendly. It's just nothing compared to Europe, where you just walk around and, you know, don't say hi to each other because you'd rather take care of your own shit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was definitely cool hanging out with you at the whole ICAST thing. It was one of the things that made it so much fun, is got 3 days to hang out with friends and drink
Indeed.
And point at snakes. So, yeah, done. I'll do that any day.
I'm going back next summer, that's for sure. So if there's no ICAST, it would be Cabot Fest then. If Howard is still throwing that shit, so...
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed ICAST. It was, if I have to be honest, I didn't go to, you know, a lot of those presentations, but I was too hungover, so
yeah,
it pretty much sucked. But I really enjoyed being there and got a lot of good friends, and it's. If you're from Europe and listening, you should go. It's really nice, and people are so kind, and you can learn a lot of stuff, you know, from other experience, and so.
Yeah.
All right, you'll return the favor, because I got to go to the ham show at one point before I die. So it'll be one of those things. We'll hang out there.
I call it the goat market and the Mike Fist, but it's pretty nice.
Oh, no.
Oh, God, no.
It's like if you have three rows in an American show, on the same space, you would have like six or seven rows.
God, no.
Nah, and it's just hot as hell, and people are sweating, so.
Oh,
but
good.
It's part of the charm.
I don't want to go anymore.
So I guess for our comparison, Owen, that sounds like if Hamburg
went on roids. Yeah.
About 10 more rows of tables inside that little barn.
I'd kill myself. Come on.
The great part is that there's a lot more than just ball pythons. It's you get to see, different, very different stuff. You know, there's a lot of breeding weird stuff, and you have got a lot of, amphibians and colubrids and rare stuff. So if you want to go and take some nice pictures of animals you never see, it's a place, because there's just everything. It's pretty cool.
To bring a master sightings along with me just in case.
There's always a lot of cool monitors as well, so that's pretty cool. I like watching monitors. So.
Yeah.
They're badass. I just can't keep them.
Neither could I. They're just too big.
Too much work.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'll leave that to other people I know who are crazy enough for it. So.
So with that, we wanted to talk to you a bit about some of your thoughts on, you just brought up the whole ball python thing. Where do you fall in the whole world of, and maybe it differs over there than it does here, but what are your thoughts on the whole split in the reptile world between if you're into morphs or you're anti-morph or anti-ball python and, where do you think you fall, or do you even give a shit?
It's the same in Europe. It's exactly the same. But, and I don't give a shit.
There we go.
I think it's fun to make, I think it's okay to make fun of the ball python people. They deserve it, but I'm not that, I'm not that serious while doing it. I'm more like doing with a smile on my face, because, and they know it's not for, I'm not mocking them for real. I'm just, making some fun. And okay. And if they don't understand that, they can fuck off.
And now the hammer's dropped.
Boom.
I think it's funny, because I think it's okay to, make some mess once in a while, and I think people should just take it easy and, don't be so serious all the time. And, as much as I do think that scaleless ball pythons are weird and I would never keep them, I think it's pretty wicked to look at. I must say that. It's beautiful, but it's not natural. But many things are beautiful and not natural, so.
Well, I guess the spin with the scaleless ball python, I guess one of the things that I didn't understand is, you had people arguing that keep jags, and jags are like, come on, man, they're not rejected.
That's like breeding retards, but
I don't know. I mean, why is one mutation worse than another one? They're both mutations, so
yeah.
I'm kind of with you. The scaleless isn't my thing, but I also have to be realistic to think that if I hatched out a scaleless carpet python, without seeing it in front of me, I don't know whether or not what I would think of
it. I love to feel what it feels like, you know. I love to holding one, but that's about it.
Yeah.
For the amount of money that a scaleless ball python probably costs,
man,
I would just steal a whole house full of bowline instead.
Heck yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
I think you would be just stupid if you wanted to buy that one.
just.
Damn.
Oh, yeah. Can you, I kind of guess it just rejuvenated the whole ball python thing. Do you find that, you know, like, one of the things that I noticed this week, and I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, was Bill from Phoenix Reptiles. He was on that show, Herperperay.
Yeah, I listened to that one. That was nice. He's pretty good at advertising the carpet python world, if you want to call it that. He did a great job. So.
Yeah. And I think with that is, because, you know, he's talking to people that are mostly into ball pythons, and because that's what their show mainly talks about. But, you know, I think that sometimes maybe we miss the boat a little bit, and I guess that's my whole point, is that you're trying to educate somebody about carpet pythons or Moralia or whatever. They might be afraid. It's the same thing with what you're doing with us, with carpet pythons, with the poplin pythons. If we keep carpet pythons, we might be a little bit, oh, no, we can't keep that. Wait a minute, you know. And sometimes, you know, just a little bit of education from somebody that keeps the species may get people more into the species that they're working with, you know, so.
I think Bill is doing a great thing because he is in the ball python community, and then when he is in that community, he maybe got some, you know, skills to get people to at least try a carpet pythons.
Right.
And you know, when people just, if they just got one carpet python, you know how the drill is, you just can't have one, so. I think he's doing a great job, and if you can just, you know, convince a couple of people to try one, that would be nice. You know, the more the merrier. If we get more people in this Moralia world, I think it's nice. I don't mind carpet pythons being, you know, a popular snake because they're great. They're a great snake, so. Why shouldn't more people, you know, have the pleasure of keeping them? So.
Sure, absolutely. So where do you see the future of carpet pythons going? Do you see them growing?
I think we really, really need another pattern mutation. There's a lot of, you know, we have the zebra, we have the jack, and that's pretty much it. We have the granite, but I think we need another co-dominant pattern mutation, just, you know, to start all over. But I think it's a bright future, and a lot of people got some neat stuff going on, and we got a lot of people having some, I hate to say this word, but dinker stuff.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We have a lot of people having some, you know, unproved mutations or whatever you're going to call it. And I think we're going into a great future with carpet pythons. But that's just my opinion. I don't think we will ever hit, you know, the amount of morphs produced in the ball python world at all. But I don't care. I just keep them because I think they're nice. I don't keep them because of the possibilities of morphs. So, of course, it's fun to play with morphs once in a while, but when it all comes down to that, I love the, you know, the natural faces the most. I'm just, you know, with a foot in both waters, so I like having a bit of both.
Cool. So, what was I going to say? We have some questions from various people of the internet, you have a pretty big following via the internet. Do you think it's important to have a good internet rep and to set a tone throughout the entire world almost is a very good from a buyer's and a seller's point?
Of course, if you have a big following, it's important to be, you know, have a great tone when you chat and when you post stuff. So, but still, you know, you can, as I said earlier, it's not illegal to be fun from time to time. So, if you mix your professionalism up with some, you know, fun stuff, it should all work out. But you know, I think it's better to, you know, having both being fun and being serious than just being totally serious. You know, I like to talk. You know, for example, with Paul Harris, he's a great guy, and when I chat with him, he's fun to talk with, and you know, I respect him a lot, and he's both professional, but you know, can be fun, and you know, so I think it's very important to not just be professional, but also be, you know, more speak with your customers and treat them like they were your, you know, good friends. And
yeah. So basically, you kind of got to right in the middle there. You got to know when it's going to be professional, it's going to be all that other stuff.
I just see a lot of people that's way too professional for my taste, you know, like everything that's going on is just so serious, and if you just make one small mistake, even if, you know, for real, and they just, you know, answer with a stupid answer. So,
makes sense.
I think it's very important to, you know, when it comes to, you know, paperwork and managers and all that stuff, I like it to be, you know, professional and serious, but I like, you know, just like everybody else, just fuck around and have a great time.
Cool.
Sure. Did that? Yeah,
so.
I thought. Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. Like, I think that sometimes it's good to be have that serious tone, and then other times, you know, to be able to have fun with it. That's what it's all about, you know. To have fun with it.
Really, it's just a hobby, and you know, for some it's not a hobby, but for most of us it is a hobby, and we just gotta keep it fun, you know.
Yeah.
It's not fun to sit around and arguing with people all the time. You just need to be happy and make some fun stuff up a couple of times and be serious some other times, and you know, everything will be fine, but that's just my opinion.
Right. It's a good opinion. So I have a bunch of questions here from the internet, from your good friends. I'll go through a few of them right now. Chris Behoff wants to know when Scream Jags will be coming to the United States.
You can ask him. I still Gamma Jack so bad. I really want them to, you know, outcross with the Scream Jack to see what's going on there.
Holy crap, that's insane. No, don't do it.
It's funny because the Gamma Jacks both got insane nice contrast, and they got that really clean, deep screaming colors. And the Scream Jacks are like, they have got a bit more boost in the colors, but a bit more washed out in the patterns. So I really want to see what we can do if we combine those two.
That would be crazy. I don't even know what that would be like. But yeah. Somebody get Casper a Gamma Jag and send it to him for the love of God. So.
I need one. Or Chris should get a Screen Jag.
Yeah, there you go.
He got a lot of like hoarding for those Gamma Jags, so I think he got a lot of females ready for a Screen Jag.
Alright. Zach Baez wants to know what is the weather like in Asgard?
It's pretty cold.
Okay, pretty cold. All right, that happens.
Well, I would drink all that, you know, Viking juice.
The Viking juice. That brings me into what Josh Easter wants to know. First off, how heavy is Thor's hammer? And is it easier to pillage Sweden or Germany from Denmark?
I would say that it's easiest to go to Sweden. And, you know,
okay.
The Danes have been going there back and forth fighting those for quite some time now and have done it in the past century, so... And according to the hammer, it's only I'm the only one that can lift it.
I'm the only one who can lift it, so it's pretty freaking heavy.
To other people, it's insanely heavy, and to me, it's just you know, a piece of paper.
Hammer.
That's a feather. Oh my God. I have another one from Anna Maria. Wants to know if you celebrate Halloween over in Denmark.
We do.
Cool.
And as a matter of fact, this Halloween, a lot of kids came knocking on my door, and I got no candy. So I was. I was not popular. I was thinking of throwing up some mice and just slamming them there.
Oh, my God. That dude gave us rats. What the hell's wrong with him?
It's freaking Halloween. They need that like candy or money.
All right.
Look,
Mom,
we got a dead stinking mouse.
That's pretty good. I would not have thought of that one. Apparently, B-Hop also wants to know if you still work with hogs and are they a good side project?
I still have four hogs left, actually. And my good friend, Lasse, from the other part of Singular Reptiles, he keeps all our hognose stuff at the moment. And he will, you know, in the future, keep it for real. So,
what was it? You Casper,
I'm a Python man.
Yeah. Casper, was it you that posted up the picture of all the little baby hogs after they hatched out and they were all pretending to be dead?
Yeah.
Mass suicide or something like that in the egg pen.
Yeah. That was mass suicidal tendencies going on there.
So,
like
I would do hognose.
They're neat snakes. They're fun, and they're like, it's funny because they got that bluff just like the pavlins do. They just hiss and puff all the time, and it's just you know, they don't do anything. They just do it to scare you, but they won't ever bite you. I've never had a hognose bite at all, so. They never try to bite me.
Well, that's cool.
Awesome.
But they piss
cool.
on you all the time. Spray shit in your face.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, I don't like them anymore.
All the baby stuff. That, and they're pretty good at aiming, you know. They once they almost got me in the mouth.
Oh, my God.
They're doing that small, you know, whiff with the tails and just splash a lot of stinking shit in your face.
Fun times.
Oh, yeah.
Afterwards, playing dead. So.
No, all right, well, what other questions do you have there, Owen? We're almost out of time.
But they're ridiculous. Like, Zach wants to know, first off, Zach wants to know a few things. He wants to know how good Natalie Portman was, who styles your hair, if it's natural or dyed, and how many dark elves did you slay during the first War of the Realms? And when did your helmet become out of style? A lot of stuff pertaining to you being Thor.
So have you watched my new film lately? My new movie?
Yeah. I'm so glad you could take the time off of your new movie to come talk to us.
To come and talk with us, Snake.
God. I do remember that you were giving a paper hammer at ICAST.
According to Zach, Natalie Portman has a way too big head, so.
What?
He told
her
me
head
yeah,
is
he's
too
crazy.
Big.
He's a nut.
Yeah,
apparently. If she would ever ask Zach if they could share
he would say
that,
no.
No.
He would say no.
I'm sorry, your head is
I don't
too fuck, big.
I don't freaking believe that. I don't freaking believe that.
That's great. Poor
yeah.
guy. He's
so
even picky
he,
about that.
He on the line, David Kelly, he promised me to call him.
I guess not.
Oh, wait, let me see. I haven't clicked on the page. Oh, this might be David.
Last time
is that you, David?
Yeah, that's me.
Did you, David?
Yeah, it's me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
All right. Yeah, he's been bugging me to call him the entire time, so here I am, Doug. What's going on?
Don't sound so excited, Dave.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. I'm so glad you calmed down, David.
Dave,
the enthusiasm is just driving me nuts. I'm
too far. Dial down the passion.
Passion meter, -25.
Oh, no.
It's another subject I just wanted to, you know, talk a bit about. I don't understand why people that keep Australian olives don't keep Epidaurus. I don't understand it. It's like it's popular keeping the Australian pythons, but it's less popular keeping the New Guinean, Indonesian pythons. I don't get it. It's just, why? I don't understand why you would, you know, choose the snake everybody's keeping instead of a much nicer snake that no one is keeping.
I need more cage space. That's my excuse.
Because
so.
You know why, Casper? You know why? Because most people are followers. Most people follow what other people do. Nobody wants to. You very rarely find people that step outside of that box and say, you know what? I want to be the one that people follow. You know. So
no, I'm not keeping snakes for, you know, other sakes. I'm keeping snakes, you know, because it makes me happy. So why not keeping the snakes that really, you know, what really turns me on, you know, instead of, you know, always following around. And I want that ball python most because then some of the bigger guys maybe think I'm cool or, you know what I'm saying? It's just like,
yeah, but you know, I think that that's the thing, and that's the thing why I don't like to knock other people with their what they're keeping or not keeping, and like, who am I to judge what you think is cool or not cool? Like, I mean, you know, you could be really into, I don't know, you could be into green anoles for all I care, and you know, if that's what floats your boat, then go for it, man. You know, I mean. Who am I to come along and say, wow, that's boring, you know? You should keep this, you know? I think that's my whole take on that whole rare reptile thing. It's like, if there was more people that kept what they like and not what other people like, that problem would be solved instantaneously.
Yeah.
You talk about imbricata, right? You just said, you were talking earlier about how dull they look and how nasty they look, and you know. But to me personally, I don't give a shit if other people like them or don't.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep them because they're probably cool,
pythons,
just like all the other carpet pythons, you know. So like, they might not be popular. Nobody might care.
I've seen some Imbricatus that is just amazing. Some black and white one. Those were nuts.
Right.
I'm trying to see if I can find a picture of it and show you guys on the forum. But
right. But you know what I mean? Like, I think that I'm not going to base that off of what, you know, what people think. Well, just look at as far as what I keep as far as carpet pythons. The norm is to keep jungles, you know. Nope. I'm going to keep IJs because it's just, for me, that's the colors that work for me, you know.
Yeah, they're still way cooler.
So I don't,
the dark
side, you know,
rules.
That's right.
I really like, you know, Valkyrie, you know, Dave's new one.
He's
just nuts. Is he still
he's
here?
Pretty awesome. I'm still here.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk?
You're talking about Apodora. I'm gonna let you do that.
Huh?
I said you're talking about your Apodora and olive pythons. I'm trying to let you have your spotlight.
Oh, yeah. I seriously don't understand why people, you know, I think it's actually because most people don't know about Apodoras.
No.
They're just still one of the most unknown pythons, you know, to the hobby. And if more people just knew about them, or actually could see them in person and even handle them, they would be, you know, one of the most popular pythons because they're so easy to keep, not demanding at all, and they're like so tame by nature, and they're just amazing. We just need more Apodora keepers out there so we can, you know, get a chance for getting some captive bred ones in the future, and
So if somebody go ahead, Dave.
Sorry, I was going to ask Casper, how readily are they imported, and like what size are they usually imported in? Hatchlings, sub-adults, adults?
They are never imported as hatchlings. I've never seen imported hatchlings. They're like yearlings at the smallest, and then up to adults. So, it's pretty rare that they are imported, at least in Europe. It's not every year they come in and you know. So they're not easy to get. So if you see one, if you see some out there, just buy them. Get some. I'm just super stoked to have captive bread.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
species driving my mind crazy.
I don't know if they're still available, but there was a captive born and bred pair, I think, on Fauna a while back.
Yeah, there was on Kingsnake 2, and I posted it on Facebook saying, you're nuts if you don't buy this pair, because it was fairly cheap. It was like $1,500 for adult captive bred pair of problem pythons. That makes no sense to me.
There was
I would have bought them without, you know, just sending the money straight away.
There was, in Hamburg, I remember we were walking around. Remember we were walking around, Owen, and it said olive python. We're like, no way is that an olive python.
That is a common misconception. there was somebody here who had an adult papillon that he kept trying to sell, and he kept bringing it to the shows and bringing it to the shows and bringing it to the shows, and he shoved it into this very small bin, and it would just kind of sit there, and it was one of those, you know, you just want to buy it just so this idiot doesn't have it anymore, but I think he eventually sold it to someone who paired it up. It was a big adult female, but every 2 seconds he's letting people hold it and touch it, and, you know, of course, with Casper telling me that they will partake in eating other snakes, it may not have been the best idea, but it was hanging out here for a while, or hanging out there for a while, but
it was probably too stressed out to know doing anything at all. So, and it's funny because people think they're pretty ugly, but that's because they're seeing adult imports coming in, and adult imports often have lots of scars. You know, they're really I don't know, they're just a python that just, you know, they're very, they just try to consume everything, and sometimes it goes wrong and they get a bite here and there, and they just got a lot of scars when adult comes in. So they can't be pretty, you know, they can look ugly when they're just fresh imports because they're dark, they're nervous. They got all those scars that's maybe not treated perfectly and a lot of parasites. So when you first see them, they can look ugly, but, you know, if you just keep them for a couple of years, they will just turn into the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. So, and the funny thing about those is the color change. They go from that, you know, silvery, bluish, black to that super light olive colors with a totally light gray head, and it's just amazing.
Now, you mentioned they eat snakes. Are they like a black-headed python in that a large part of their diet is reptiles, or are they more of a generalist where they'll literally just eat anything they can get their mouths on?
They're a lot larger than the black-headed python, so you know, they can't just live off just eating smaller reptiles. So there has actually been you know, I think I saw Mark O'Shea, according to him, that they found a 22-kilo wombat inside a stomach of a Papuan python. I don't know what it is in pounds, but that's like almost 50 pounds of wombat inside a Papuan stomach. So they're like amethystines. They consume, you know, big prey items and a lot of mammals too.
Okay.
So, and they, you know, the metabolic rate is just insane. They're just, if you feed them, they're empty the day after. So, that's another thing. They one of those things they really require, that's a lot of, you know, you need to change the newspaper once in a while because they shit a lot and they eat a lot. So
is that like similar to the bolans? Same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, they feel like you know, a humongous colubrid.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well. I don't know if there's anything else you guys wanted to hit on, but we're into overtime now, so. And it's, what, 5 o'clock in the morning probably now?
Yeah, I think we should let Casper go to sleep. It's 5 o'clock, so.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Got to let you get some sleep.
I'm glad we do that. I'm glad you didn't bought Loki on the show as well.
No, yeah, it didn't happen. Sorry.
he's kind of a dick, so.
Oh, man. All right. So, yeah, Casper,
just,
you...
just a short...
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, just a shout out to Frederick. He's the boss, and, yeah. Just want to call that one out.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. So, what's your website, and how do people get in touch with you, and where do they go and see these cool species that you keep?
It's pretty easy. My singularreptiles.com is not updated at all, so don't go there. just go to /singularreptiles, and that's it.
Okay.
I will have my my pictures there. I tend to update a lot with a lot of different pictures from different animals, hognose snakes, Papuan pythons, bullhorn pythons, whatever, water pythons. And I have my available list there as well. And go throw a like if you're in Europe. You can come if you're interested in anything, and yeah, that's about it.
All right, cool.
So actually, I just want to shortly say that I just made two groups, one group called Reptile Room on Facebook, where you can go and post pictures of your reptile rooms and, yeah, get some nice ideas for your own rooms, showing and seeing other pictures. So that's pretty neat, going there and show off your room and get some ideas. And the other one is Rare Reptiles Europe. So it's just like Jordan made one for the US people. I just wanted to for the European people. So it's Rare Reptile Classifies Point Europe. So go there if you're from Europe and like the rarer stuff.
Okay. Rare. I'm going to put all this stuff on the Morelia Python Radio page so people can check it out. Rare Reptile. Oh, maybe I'm not on that group.
You just did it. Yeah, because popping up on my screen. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. All right, well, I don't see if I'm in that group. So I'll get that one up there. But we want to thank you for coming on, Casper, again, and you're welcome anytime. And thanks for chiming in, Dave, and giving your giving your two cents there.
Short service from Dave, but
yeah, get that kid some schnapps, would you? Jeez.
Yeah, please, man. I'm looking so much forward to seeing you guys again. It's been a pleasure, like always, and. Yeah, can't wait for some more Nerdy Talk in the future episodes. So, and you guys are doing a great job. I love the show, and I'm doing all I can to, you know, advertise it in Europe so more people can...
Damn right.
Listen to it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Cool. Good stuff.
You're the best, guys.
All right, thanks, Casper.
And the last point. Please buy some super camels. Please buy some super camels.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. You need those.
Thank you, for the love of Christ.
Wait, hold on. Let's everybody be quiet to see if I can somehow get the... Go ahead.
Please buy some fucking super camels for Owen's sake so we can get those carinatas.
I need that recorded. I need that to be displayed whenever somebody goes onto the Super Caramel part of the webpage.
You click on the little picture of the Super Caramel and it goes,
yeah,
that.
Please buy the Super Caramel. Yeah, done. Done. Done.
All right. Thank you, Casper. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. See you, Casper.
All right, we will shoot down our list, Owen, and we will get the heck out of here. And let's see. Next week is the results show for the calendar. So like I said at the beginning of the show, if you have not gotten your picture yet, make sure that you get over to MoreliaPythons.com or Morelia Python Radio Facebook page and post up your picture and so you can get in on the contest. The contest ends tomorrow night, so check that out. Let's see. Make sure you check out MoreliaPythons.com, the forum, www.MoreliaPythons.com. And check out MoreliaPythonRadio.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're still working on that, and that's a work in progress. But, you know, like I said, eventually that will be the encyclopedia of Morelia. And let's see what other – I'm trying to think if we have any other shows coming up. At the end of the month, we have the Carpet Roundtable number – what are we up to? Number three? Number four.
Three, four, who knows?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but we'll be talking carpet pythons, and then I think we are going to be I can't forget this. It's Corrales Radio. We are going to be guests.
Yes.
Owen and I.
December 1st, we actually get to be the guests.
Weird. Yes. It's going to be pretty interesting. So make sure you go and check out those guys, CorralesRadio.com. You can check out their Facebook page. Go over on Blog Talk, just like you see Morelia Python Radio. You can check out their shows over there and give those guys a shout. Some cool shows that they got, and they talk about some cool topics and cool species, and it's a good show, so be sure to check it out. I think that's all I got. If you want to find out what I have going on, breeding season has begun. You can check out ebmorelia.com for updates, or you can check out the Facebook page, EB Morelia. Go over there, give it a like, and follow us, and you can see what we are working with for the 2014 season that has begun. That's all I got, Owen. Go ahead.
All right. What we got is that, like Eric said, breeding season is underway. You can go to rogue-reptiles.com to check out all the breeding pairs that we have situated. You can also go to Rogue Reptiles on Facebook.com, where there is a note of the complete list of all the pairs that we're doing this year and the expected babies. If you're interested in any of the babies, you can contact us, either email, private message, phone number, carrier pigeon, all are acceptable. To be placed on a list for some of the babies. Some of those lists have already begun to fill up, so if you're interested, there's no harm in putting your name on a list somewhere. For the shows, we have one coming up December 7th in Hamburg, Pennsylvania, and then I think we're going to go through a pretty big drought during the winter season. I don't think we have another one until possibly January after that, but either way, you can reach out at us at rogue-reptiles.com, and that's all we got. Thank you all for checking in with us this week, and we hope to see you next time for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night.